interview I did with Jay, the street rider. I first came across his stuff, Dear Stranger. He posted letters around Melbourne, and I was posting a lot of poetry around as well. I've done it on and off over a long time, and I was going through a bit of a sticking poems around street poles. I think I did an episode of that 2 years ago, near the early ones. But anyway, finally had a chat with him. We caught up 4 or 5 years later. This is a bit of a long interview, but it sort of just cuts off abruptly near the end. So anyway, I'm not even sure how. Like, part of me just wants to talk normal, and part of me wants to ask interviewee type questions to make an interviewee for the. So I can I'll whittle it down is something like 10 or 15 minutes, whatever it ends up being, but
nice, yeah.
Yeah, tell. Okay, I'll ask interviewee style question. Just and yeah.
Why don't we go back and forth? So yeah. You ask me a question. I ask you. Is that all right?
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So you've been doing like Hello Stranger letters for fucking 5 to 7 years or some shit.
Yeah, a long time. As long as you, I mean, I remember seeing you first. Actually, I started
Dear Stranger.
Dear Stranger letters.
Dear Stranger. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, yeah, I started in Melbourne. And then I think not long after starting that, I think you might have been doing your little poems before me, actually, because you've been doing them a while as well. I don't think you do them as much anymore.
I haven't done them as much. Yeah, that I was just before, I've done them here and there sporadically over the years, but yeah.
It's a very brutal process sometimes. As you know, like the amount of time you spent on the street, like putting these letters up, putting the poems up, and then I think for me it's been absolutely fantastic because I don't know about for you, but I kind of see like when I'm writing, my mind's like a prison, and the longer I spend in my mind writing, the hotter the prison walls become, it gets to the point where it's like, when it reaches to a point where it's hot enough, the demons called anxiety start spawning. And to be honest, putting these letters up, I mean, there's nothing creative about it. You're just an idiot putting, like, sticking paper to walls, but it almost cuts the brain down. Do you know what I mean?
A wind down? Yeah, totally. For sure.
What about you?
Yeah, no, I hear you about, writing can just feel like suffocating on my own farts if I go for long enough, which is sometimes isn't a bad thing. I like the smell of my own farts, but sometimes it can just get too much. And the times that I have walked around and done stuff and stuck poems to things, I remember walking, most of the time I go, I'm sticking this poem up, but I don't even relate to it anymore, but I'm just sticking it on the wall. It's got nothing to do with me. But I'm enjoying the process of walking around, sticking. It feels like knitting or something. It feels cathartic. You get to walk off your anxiety or whatever. You get to see new places you'd never go. And it feels like there's a purpose to it. Like, I like walking to the supermarket, not to get dinner, but sometimes just for the walk, and the dinner just happens to be a...
It's like a sort of therapy process to kind of stop your mind going wild.
Yeah. It's a really nice balance of, getting your exercise in to feel semi-sane again. And while you're doing that, Jay, I'm assume, you'll witness a lot of stuff, the interesting stuff that ends up being good for writing. Yeah. And it's like a circle. Yeah. And it all feeds off itself.
You know, I've been listening to your podcast literally last week, and a week before last week. I was kind of going through, like, everything felt a bit grey, you know, because I had been working full-time for a long time, for, like, a while, and I'd kind of come out of the full-time work because I work freelance. So I'd been coming out of the full-time work into, like, nothing. And then all I've got is basically time to do my letters and write. And I kind of took me a while to readjust to kind of thinking deeply and listening to your podcast. Helped rewire my brain into meditatively thinking. It helped me a lot.
Jeez, Jack.
Just listening to you, because as you know, when you spend a lot of time on the street, like, you know, I'm probably averaging when I'm going out about 8 hours a day posting letters.
Oh,
and it's a lot on your own. But listening to your podcast, it kind of just rewired my brain to look at things more deeply, because when you're working a 9-to-5 kind of gig, you don't need to think deeply, because at the end of the day, you're so hardwired into getting from point A to point B that you're exhausted by the time you get... You know what I mean?
Where totally.
I think there's a beauty in that in some sense. I can understand why the 9-to-5 is so appealing to many people, because it almost gives a person just a platform to arrive to, and they can feel safe at that platform. Whereas when you're not working that 9-to-5 routine, you don't know how far that platform's going to be until you arrive at it, or you're going to be there in the next. Do you know what I mean?
Structure and routine is real. It's good for an anxious brain like me, when you're writing. Totally. Structure and routine makes so much sense I get it. Like, the 9-to-5 can be real. There's some positives in it. I hear. Sometimes I feel semi-sane. I felt sane, but then it makes you go insane after a while as well.
Yeah.
Then you need to go, it's always one end of the seesaw to the other. It's like, and that seesaw for you sounds like, also just writing and then going out and posting and then writing. Yeah, those weird balances to constantly keep us, little recorrections. Sometimes I miss the 9-to-5 because there's so much bullshit you have to see. And sometimes it's really amusing, especially in the first couple of weeks when you start at a job. It feels like, oh my God, is this even real? What the fuck? But then you're slowly acclimatized and it's all normal, and it's just, and you almost start talking in bullshit as well. You can't help it. It's just human. But anyway. What is the 9-to-5 you're doing at the moment?
I work in the film industry. So I'm called a grip, like a camera engineer.
Right.
So we're like miners, or deep sea trawler people. We work roughly 10 to 12 hours a day, 5 days, 6 days a week. So we're like full on, when we're working, we are in it.
Yeah.
And it's almost when I'm in that world, I turn my creative brain off, and it just allows it to regenerate.
Yeah.
And then by the time I finish the stint of work, because we have lots of time in between our work. So I use that time that I have off as like holy time to do the writing.
Yeah.
But by the time I've arrived to the kind of open air, then I'm somewhat re-energized, if that makes sense. It's this weird balance that I've kind of learning how to find.
Yeah. Or when you say arriving at the open air of out the other side of the day when it's your time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have any routines to get into when you arrive into open air? To joggle your brain off the train tracks of the brain you were just on for 8 hours or however long it was. I know they don't run. The movie industry doesn't really do 8 hours. It's more however long we need you for, yeah? And
The film industry, sorry.
TV. Did you say you worked in TV production?
Yeah.
I call it the film industry, sorry. Yeah.
The same stuff, yeah. So, we work generally, 10 to 12 hours a day per week, every week, sorry. So, 5 days, 6 days a week for that time.
Right.
And, what I was trying to say, sorry, my interpretation's not correct, it's when I'm working, even when I'm working in the film industry period, it's like I can't use my creative brain the whole time I'm working, because our job is very physical, manual labor.
Yeah.
So I turn off all my creative side just to kind of keep my energy up. And it's almost by open air is when I've finished my job, and I've got 4 months off.
Oh, so right. So you might have weeks off, and then that's not the end of it, not an evening off. Weeks off. And then,
It's my weird balance. So now this is like, and whenever I finish my job, it takes me a few weeks to kind of like, you know, when it, like we're saying, like a diver, when they, is it equalizing?
You're probably going through that emotional airlock to come to find that weird level of sanity again, to be able to J the writer, J the thinker again, rather than J the manual laborer. So it takes does it take a few days or a few weeks to find that?
It takes usually a few weeks. Because you're kind of going from, like, it's almost like going to the gym. It's like you're going from not using that muscle at all because it's not really in your day-to-day life. That muscle is basically what keeps you going.
Use it. So you're not always in Jay the Rider mode, and you'll switch out of it. So you have seasons. You have a season of doing the stuff that pays, keeps the roof over your head, and then keeps the existential floor beneath your feet when you're riding again. So you're jumping between the two. Yeah. Cool.
It's like split personality.
Yeah, excellent. What season are you in right now?
I'm in like autumn. Like, I don't know, because
I mean.
I think winter's a
season. As in, are you in open air season at the moment for Jay, the rider?
I'm finally kind of coming out into it, because when I went to Morocco last week, it kind of just injected a lot of inspiration into kind of like being, because Morocco is such a special country. It's almost, you know, I met someone in the Medina. So I'm not sure if you're familiar with Morocco. You have like these Medinas, which is it's like basically imagine a labyrinth of market stalls that have like just every kind of life you can think of. And there's like these little holes in the walls where they have like these like mysterious coffee shops or tea shops and stuff like this. And I met this one guy from Scotland in like this middle of nowhere tea shop, like burrowed deep into this labyrinth. And he just got talking to me, asked me where I was from. And he said, oh, do you know a poet called Robert Burns? And I was like, no. And he was like, how can you not know who Robert Burns is? And I was like, I don't know. And I didn't even tell him I was a writer at that point, which made it even worse. and apparently he's like the most famous Scottish poet ever. Anyways, he got talking, and it turns out he'd been coming to Morocco for 22 years, every year, for like 2 months, 3 months.
Right.
And I asked him, why do you come back here every year? And he says, I come back every year to remember how it feels to be human, because in Morocco people are very open. Like, it's so normal to talk to strangers, it's so normal to just interact with people. Like, it's almost a whole ecosystem, especially in a city called Rabat, which is the capital, and it's not that touristic compared to everywhere else in Morocco. Whereas, like, for example, to explain this city, is in this Medina, you've got the markets, and you'll have one person selling the same souvenir shit as the next one, right?
Yeah.
And let's say you're in another place, people will be trying to compete against each other naturally in a marketplace.
Yeah.
Whereas Rabat, it wasn't like that. Like, they were supporting each other. They were selling the same crap to tourists at that area, but they were supporting each other. So they were happy if one of them makes a sale. And to me, that represents humanity. It's like they were helping each other, you know? And I don't know if that explains what I'm trying to say about that.
A lot of the way we think, even me sometimes I think, there's only a finite resource of goodness, and I greedily want to get it before other people do. And then I think, no, it's for everyone. Everyone has, there's enough for everyone, Darby. Stop bullshitting yourself and thinking like a moron. But totally. Like, yeah, it's a mindset that's at our places like Australia, where I live, everyone's stuck in it. I am. But yeah, it sounds like Morocco is a bit more enlightened and knows that there's it's all help each other. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it's just more when you think of like the old world kind of experience, it's still kind of in the past, but at the same time, it still carries a bit of progression. I don't know how, like, for example, Marrakesh, a lot of tourists go to Marrakesh, and I almost call Marrakesh a feast for the senses, because when you go to Marrakesh, you'll see snake charmers, you know, and they'll basically lace snakes with opium to make them swing, or like you'll have like men throwing monkeys at tourists to kind of get money, and it's literally a chaos.
Oh, yeah.
Like it's a fever, and it's almost, whereas Rabat for me is like a feast for the soul, because because there's not much tourism there, and it's almost what I find with a lot of touristic places is, you know, I find when somewhere becomes popular, the opportunists, the leeches, and the hustlers of society gravitate towards that specific area, because it's almost like, you know, leeches to blood.
Yeah.
Because it's all, especially in a place like that, when there's not that much money coming in, it's, do you know what I mean?
Whereas someone will exploit it and gentrify the shit out of it at some point. Yeah.
Like anywhere. Whereas that's why the beauty of Rabat, there wasn't much tourism, so you didn't have everyone treat you as their own. And I think that kind of relates to anywhere. Like it just was really like high contrast.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm waffling, but
yes. So did you go to Morocco because it was part of the job at the time, or did you just go there on a whim?
Just went on a whim with my girlfriend, and I used my dear stranger as an excuse to have a purpose to go there as well.
Excellent. Fuck yeah.
You know, like as you know, when you get old, like when we're all getting older and stuff, it's almost like you do stuff. It's almost people expect you to have a purpose behind it. I don't know if that makes sense. It's like, like with these Dear Stranger letters, like I love doing it, and I love, you know, make people send me messages, and it's really sweet, and I love to make people smile and stuff. But at the same time, it's a selfish thing of me to do, because I'm a travel addict. Like I've got burning feet syndrome. I can't stay in one place longer than a few months. I get proper anxiety. So
yeah,
Stranger Project is almost a reason to be an addict.
Yeah, it is totally. Yeah. I feel like I'm just searching for a high each day. I'm a junkie searching for an idea high. And yeah, and on selfishness, like David Lynch, he's one of my favorite artists. He said something, he doesn't often say these sorts of things, but he said something like, as an artist, you have to be selfish. It's just part of the gig. It's a selfish thing, but it also feed a lot of people at the same, he didn't say feed a lot of people at the same time, but I love that he said that, because I love David Lynch so much. And the stories I hear, some of my favourite artists were really selfish, and they neglected their families and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, and sometimes I feel you, like, not to elaborate too much on just a flippant thing you said, but yeah, sometimes I feel, yeah, totally completely self-centred, selfish with my art, and then I go, shut the fuck up, Darby, it's beneficial for everyone if it works, but sometimes it is, sometimes it's, but yeah, stupid fight in the brain that I have to tell my brain to shut the fuck up sometimes. But yeah, anyway, that was my little sidetrack thought on that. But yeah.
I wanted to ask you a question, if that's okay.
Yeah.
So, because there's one thing that also stood in my mind for a long time that is about, I remember you told me that, you know, when you're an artist to create quality work, sometimes you have to be alone. And I remember you sent me that. And for me, it's always stuck with me, because honestly, when I went off and found kind of my own lonely kind of path, I feel like I found myself a lot more than when I was around lots of people.
Oh.
And I wanted to ask you, like, you know, because you're in Melbourne, you're in the, you know, in Australia, the capital of arts, for example.
Yeah.
Do you Like, how do you feel? Like, are you happier kind of being like a lone wolf, or do you feel like you'd like a community? Like, in your mind, how do you feel?
Maybe I would have liked a community in my 20s when I was a bit more, I felt a bit more lost. I still feel lost, but in a different kind of way. I remember when I worked in advertising for 2 years, I loved that everyone was, the people I worked with were all trying to come up with ideas, and there was something really magical about being amongst other people where we're all trying to pull sh make something out of nothing, and that was really fun. But yeah, maybe it's, yeah, sometimes I just feel like I have to find my own stupid way through a bit. And I love the energy of, I have loved the energy in the past, and sometimes I think, oh, have I missed out on something? But yeah, that I remember being in advertising for 2 years or whatever it was. I felt, oh, that was enough. Sometimes I think I wish that I did some sort of creative course years ago, or and that would have been interesting to be around same people, similar people. But I remember, yeah, I find a lot, yeah, I just. One of my friends, he was the youngest to be published by Penguin in Australia back in the 90s, and he's he I wouldn't even consider him a writer. He just happens to his writing is just a byproduct of living rather than the other way around. I always find careerist writers who focus on the writing and not the living, even though that's what I've fucking become. I've become focused on totally writing and not living anymore. But yeah, he I always yeah, I love how yeah, his perspective was yeah, you have to go and sort of he just didn't like other writers. Just go and do it yourself. Just and I'm sort of going, I'm muddling my thoughts a bit, but he yeah, I love how he for me he never felt like he was a writer. Like I've known him for 7 years or something. But he's not a writer. When he does, and he's not writing anymore. He said he hates it. He says he feels like he's wasting life, and he's put all his effort into making his this beautiful garden in at his place in the country. And he said that's where he puts his creativity now. But yeah, he never felt yeah, he's not a writer. But it just happens to do it. And I love. I'm not answering your question properly, but yeah, I
I
always.
loved it.
I love, yeah, I oh, Tajay, yeah, I love, yeah, I kind of feel like I need to go and do my own thing, because, yeah, I find art, Melbourne is supposedly renowned for its art scene, but I just, maybe because I'm a little bit, I'm an introvert anyway, and it's where all introverts get together to talk about art, and there's a poetry scene as well, I don't know. Maybe I'm a bit arrogant or pretentious to feel like, oh, just, no, I'm not hanging out with that. Fuck that. I'm gonna do my own thing. But yeah, it just felt that's what I had to do. And I don't know why, but I just, yeah, just go and do my own thing, and steer clear of just groups of art, because I know in advertising it's in. When there's everyone's making magical babies with their ideas, and I felt like sometimes it could get really bitchy and really cutthroat, and my brother's girlfriend used to be in the art scene. She says it's the most bitchiest little world, and just a stu and she went. She was only in it for 5, 6 years in her early 20s, and she said just steer clear of it, Darby. If you ever find yourself in that, just go and do your own thing. But yeah, that kind of stopped her from making art altogether. She was really good, but she expresses it in a different way now. But yeah, I didn't quite answer it, but I talked
I
around
totally
it.
understand what you're saying. Like,
Yeah.
because for me, I struggled really hard to fit into Melbourne. This is why I did my letters to start with, because I couldn't find anyone of my people to relate to. Because I felt like, it, to be honest, I became what a so-called street artist, whatever the fuck that is, but I became that because of this almost rejection from this artist world in Melbourne. Because everyone's like, there's everyone listens to the same kind of music, similar kind of music. Like, there's a kind of like underground effect that you kind of have to be this certain kind of cool to fit in. Which, yeah. At the end of the day, the whole point of being cool is to be you.
Yeah.
And it's all following the same fucking manufacturing line, but they're all wearing these funky glasses because I don't know how to explain it. They all.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, they all listen to Triple R. They all, the ABC is their Bible. They all ticking the same boxes on the same government grants without thinking outside the cliche box, because they have to fit into a certain way of thinking. Ideology is everything, and yeah, I feel like Melbourne feels really. You're no longer making art, you're making propaganda when you're starting to believe all the same bullshit that everyone else is believing all at the same time. And yeah, I'd hate to be 20 years old in this day and age and trying to be an artist in especially a place like Melbourne. I fucking hate Melbourne sometimes.
It's got beautiful. Melbourne's amazing. Like the chaos that happens, especially around the State Library, it's literally like a gravitational vortex for madness. Like all the stories I found when I was in Melbourne happened at the State Library.
Oh yeah, like, I've seen your videos that you can't on YouTube. They're beautiful with narration over it. Yeah, they're four or five years old now. I remember them. They're really good. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, every city changes, but I found, like, for me, what really made Melbourne special for me when I was there was just the people of the street and just the strangers you meet. And I find myself, I don't really connect so well to many artists, because I always feel like I'm not unique enough in certain, like, I'm not really that interested in wearing really, really like cool clothes or really, you know, maybe I don't read these really in-depth books that they're supposed to read to make yourself cool. Whereas like for me, the reason why I'm talking to just everyday people, it's just real. There's no pretension. I find a lot of poets who call themselves poets. But for me, listening to you, I just love it because it's almost you just talking just as it is. You know what I mean? It's almost like you're talking to... But when I'm listening to you, it's like you're talking to yourself. Like this, also half-insane, mad wise man who kind of...
Thanks, Jay. yeah, we're half insane.
That's why I love it. You know, you don't take yourself too seriously. And I just find that when I'm talking... with like people call themselves poets and stuff, like, you know, in the scenes and stuff, it's a lot of the shit that come out of is bollocks and it doesn't make sense. And it's almost, they're not talking to themselves. They're talking to an audience to try and kind of get as many eyes on them as possible.
Yeah.
And I just, the amount of like unintentional philosophy you can find from the everyday person, you know, like just the amount of stories and philosophies I've found from like the people who don't believe they have no stories to tell, to me is where your life comes from. It's when people are not, it's almost like, you know, when you're taking a photo of someone and you take a photo and no matter what, if they know you're taking a photo, something will be amiss. And I believe that. And it's almost like when you're writing about someone, if you tell them you're writing about someone, something will be amiss because they're performing.
Yeah.
And almost that's what beauty in a lot of in life and finding stories and poetry. I find it's almost when people don't know you're a writer, they don't know you're writing about them, or then that's when you can really find the true poetry. And I don't find inspiration in people who are always performing. If that makes it, maybe it's really arrogant of me to say this.
No, it makes sense. Like, when they're always, you know, when one is always performing, always writing, and I'm starting to fall into that a little bit the last few years because now it's a full-time job. But, yeah, writers are starting to, fester in their own and sour because that's all they're doing. They're writing all the time, careerists, writers and they're writing about writing, and they're no longer living. And sometimes writing isn't really living life twice. It's just wasting it twice or something. But I hear there's lots of those writers around. Yeah, I'm trying to work out ways to not fall into that trap, which I can feel myself slowly, because it's just my 100% focus thing. I was going to quickly say I got an alert from this that said the free meeting is up in 10 minutes, and that was about 3 minutes ago. Just so you know, we got about 7 minutes before it just goes blank.
Problem. I'm enjoying our chat.
Yeah, but yeah, it is weird. Like, yeah, I've always, a lot of writing and poetry is written for other writers. It's not written for someone who doesn't read. It's not written for someone who, yeah, it's to impress other writers mostly. I think, yeah. Yeah, and you can find some of the most interesting, best stories from people who have never written in their life, but they're in their mid 50s or 60s, and they've lived shit. They've seen real shit, and they haven't been through university and blah 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 and done all the bullshit, the right things to do, and yeah.
They've got stuff to say, because I mean, they must have, you know, I guess through life, like just getting through life is a battle. So the amount of wisdom that someone accumulates in that time period.
It's weird. Yeah, for sure. How old are you now? Not that wisdom's a measurement of age, but
I'm 28, so I'm 28. Still kind of pretty young.
Yeah, for some reason I thought you were like 34 or something. Ah, that's, yeah, there you go. Yeah, I'm so jealous that you found, not jealous, that's the wrong word, but you found writing at a much earlier age than I've found it maybe in my late 30s. Fuck yeah. That's fucking great.
How did you find writing?
When I got a job as a copywriter in 2009, 2010, when I applied for every single job in the Age with a piss take resume, and advertising liked it, and they said, "You're a copywriter." And I said, "No, I'm not." And they took me in and I started writing, and they asked, "Oh, so do you read?" And I said, "Oh, not much." And they said, "Well, you can't be a copywriter if you're not reading anything." So I started reading poems, and I liked them. I was like, some of these poems are fucking awesome. They made me feel like a human again. People saying real shit that you never heard before. And so I thought, oh, maybe I can write it for myself. And that's when I started writing stuff that wasn't two-day sale or whatever the fuck I was writing in advertising. But yeah, I was, that's how I got into it. Yeah, that was, yeah, my late, mid to late 30s. Yeah.
Yeah.
How'd you get into writing? How'd that start for you?
I got kidnapped in Puerto Rico.
Right.
When I was 18. And then a lot of things happened to me in Puerto Rico. And then, and I was in a bar. And at the time, I just was working in the film industry. I kind of got a job at 18 because my child's pretty messy. And I kind of like fast-tracked into a career because I didn't go to uni and stuff like that. And I was working in the film industry and everyone was a lot older than me and I had no stories to tell. And I kind of like booked a flight to Puerto Rico. And then, because of a girl, I thought I loved the girl. She cancelled me on my flight. Just as I boarded the plane, she said, I can't see you anymore. Ah. So I was like, well, fuck it. The hostel in Puerto Rico, went off on my own, first travel trip. In the airport, I got kidnapped from the airport.
Oh.
And a lot of shit happens. I like dived out. It wasn't a very good kidnapper because he didn't lock his back door. So I had to like duck and roll out of his moving car and shit. It was a movie. And then I kind of escaped all that. And then I remember I was sitting in a bar and someone asked me, so how's your trip to Puerto Rico? And I was like, well, think this happened. And I'm like, oh my God, he's like American. You should write a book. And I was like, I'm so confused why people are interested in me. Because for so long, I had no stories to tell. I used to work. I used to just tell random facts because I had nothing to say. because everyone else had lived and I hadn't. And it was at that point I was like, wow, okay, maybe this makes me more interesting. So I started to travel more, and writing was a way to kind of remember the moments, to tell in the bars. It's almost, I was young, I wanted to be unique, you know?
Yeah.
And then I ended up getting more bad stuff. Like, yeah, I nearly died in a mountain in Spain, and I walked from Barcelona to Portugal. And I just did all this mad stuff. And, you know, I did it all for the wrong reasons, to kind of try and seek attention. But at the same time, all the mishaps that happened kind of taught me how to kind of reevaluate, you know, life. And then I met my girlfriend Echo on when I walked to Portugal. And she kind of just like made me sure I didn't die, because I was going to some really scary places. And yeah, and she stabilized me. And then when I got to Australia, I was writing, but I wasn't writing properly. I'd never really studied writing. I was just writing diary style. And when I got to Australia, I met Jaden and Robin, the other writers that you know of. And they said, here, read these books, read this book, read that book. And I just read loads. And then that's when I really started to learn how to write. I mean, I learned how to live it, but I technically learned how to write just by reading books.
Yeah.
Because I always have this angering me that I didn't go to university, and it's like, I feel like, I remember when I grew up in the US for 4 years at high school, I remember someone said to me, if you don't go to university, you're going to be a failure.
I went to and university, like, it's a waste of time. Just do your own thing. Yeah. And I only just paid off my debt 30 years later. It's a total, I think it's a rot. Anyway, continue, sorry.